music, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back. Second half. At the Races. There's any number of people when you're close to the game and you're involved in a long time, you know, you come across people and you become friendly with people that when they have opportunities at not even necessarily a high level, not even stakes level, anytime, you know, when you're together at the track or, you know, you someplace and you see somebody, and, oh, yeah, I got one in today, you have a tendency to root. When it's a race of this import, of the Kentucky Derby, I mean, we watched it with Charlotte Weber and with Ginny Mones, and we were, you know, we're hoping for the best. Didn't come off. Andy was with Seth Klarman and hoping for the best. But Gary Young was there with Amir Zidane, and he has brought Zidane Racing and Mr. Amir, Mr. Zidane, into the game at a high level and is already won big races, and Princess Noor, of course, you know, early success. And then there was this horse at a modest price that wins the Kentucky Derby. And when it comes to being happy for somebody that, you know, you know and you respect, the industry-wide pleasure at Gary Young being so closely involved in this victory, it's universal. Gary Young, congratulations.
Thank you. I mean, congratulations to you, too. Having me and Mr. Anderson back-to-back in your radio show has got to be one of the highlights of your broadcasting career, huh?
There's no doubt. There's no doubt. I'm going to put it up there.
I mean, you got to admit, somewhere Johnny Z is listening to this thinking, I knew both of these guys before they were somewhat famous, you know? I mean, this is probably happening.
The key question in this, and I speculated already yesterday, does this exercise every bad beat ever?
At Churchill Downs, my resume hasn't been too good. I mean, people that go way back can remember Laspia's jumping the mud puddles at Churchill, the Bracco getting left in the Derby. He pulled the Rock Your World in 94. Evening Jewels, Kentucky Oaks, when we basically let everyone know we thought we were going to win the race to lose by a nose, 14-1, and the Life of Penn disaster when we were convinced we were going to win the race, and then she had night fright, and you know, kind of thought after that, you know, like the only way I can get even for all these incidences is to win the Derby, and you know, I was fortunate enough to be on a team that won the Derby, so maybe I'm even with Churchill now, maybe a little bit ahead, maybe.
We'll talk about some of the ones you just listed when we do some retrospective on the career, but give everybody, Gary, the lead up, you know, what went into this before we talk about the race and talk about, you know, the last several days. I mean, talk about Amir Zidane and, you know, Bob yesterday mentioned, you know, running into him in Dubai, but, you know, your contact with him and how this relationship came about and then, you know, how things have so quickly morphed into success.
You know, Victor Espinosa and I are friends and have been friends for years, and his agent, Brian Beach, and I are friends of over 20, 30 years. And you know, Victor and Mr. Zidane are very close and good friends. You know, Victor has been mentioning to Mr. Zidane if he ever wanted to get back into the game to maybe have me work for him. And one day he called, Mr. Zidane called me, and decided to buy some 2-year-olds last year, and things have went, you know, pretty well so far. You know, Princess Noor was something that it was bittersweet that her career didn't last any longer and stuff, but you know, she was like unreal, and to have this horse come around from a totally different perspective, one being purchased for $1.35 million to one for $35,000, which is about 2.5% of what Princess Noor cost. It's pretty wild.
Tell that story, because you know there's a couple of different versions that have come out, and you have tried to essentially deflect when it comes to the selection process. But I mean, you certainly were more a part of it than you seem to be letting on.
You know, COVID kind of just messed up, in addition to everything else, kind of messed up the 2-year-old sale schedule last year, something severe. There was no Gulfstream sale. You know, sales that were usually held in March were being held in April, and so on and so forth. And the last stop of pretty much, you know, it was the OBS June sale. Last year, the OBS June sale had became last year the OBS July sale, which, you know, you're not going to need to pack any sweaters when you go to Ocala in June, and you know that there's going to be a lot of horses you're going to see that probably aren't, you know, they're not going to be graded stakes types. And but Mr. Zidane said, you know, to maybe go down there and see. And, you know, I went down there. And at the end of the 6 days, my list was not a long, of 6 days of 6-hour previews, my list was not a long one. I think it was about somewhere about 12, 14, 18 horses, whatever, for me to go check at the barn. And Mr. Zidane asked me after the last day, had I seen a horse by Portonico? And, you know, I remembered the horse because, A, it was like you kind of pick your head up when you see a first-year stallion, when you hear a first-year stallion's name. And, you know, the horse was working 3/8 of a mile, which was most of the time at those 2-year-olds in training sales, the horses work either 1/8 or 1/4. 95% of the time. So you know, I'd watched the horse work, and I remembered putting him down on the list. So we go back on the video and you look, and you know, he had a stride that was pretty nice. I mean, it was good. You know, he worked 33 flat. It was good. And the thing that really impressed me most was, usually when the few horses that do work 3/8, once they hit the wire, there's not a lot left for them in the gallop out. And this horse's gallop out was really nice. And because of that, I put him on the list. So I go and barn check the horse. You know, I video checked him to make sure that I wasn't daydreaming and everything like I do all with all the horses. I had to go back over the videos and just kind of double check them. And I went to do the barn check, and he was okay. He was okay. He was put together right, medium-sized horse, you know. And then we vetted him, and my doctor, Pug Hart, that does all my vetting, he said he's definitely okay, and he liked him as a physical also, and I flew back home to California, and Mr. Zidane and I bid on the horse over the phone, thought we'd have to go to about 50, got him for 35, and you know, that was, you know, that you know, from that point on, it was like, okay, now what? We bring him back to California. He went over to the Bradford division in Los Al, where Mike Marlowe kind of does a very good job of going through all the horses, and the ones that look like they are Bob Baffert horses stay here, and the ones that look like they might be better horses on other places, you know, kind of go other places. But he, Mike liked this horse right from the get-go, worked good, and here we are. I mean, it's been a pretty wild ride. In a pretty wild ride, yes.
When you know, when you buy one for this, you know, for this price, I mean, you can't, Gary, expect that he's going to pan out at this level. I mean, even if he is, you know, put together the right way and move nicely, I mean, it can't. I mean, when did you first, and Bob, I don't think I asked Bob this yesterday, you know, did you think to yourself, yeah, this horse is going to be a real productive runner for us?
Okay, so he's working good at Los Al for Mike, and we bring him over here, and he starts working good at Santa Anita, you know. I mean, you know, really, I mean, came over here, first work was the gate work. It was good. So Bob hooks him up with this horse and a couple of gate works named Life is Good. And, you know, Life is Good. He didn't disgrace him, but he handled him, as I feel in saying that Life is Good probably would have handled any 2-year-old in the country in a half mile gate work and right. Like that, you know, I mean, he was that fast, but, you know, Medina never gave up, and he always was catching up in the gallop out, but he did get handled by Life is Good twice. And I even said to Bob one day, you know, what do you think? You want to win him for a maiden 100 or something? And he said, let's see. So we started working him, maiden 100 claiming, I was actually inferring.
Sure.
And so then he worked him back after that with a couple of average horses, and he went back to kicking their ass. So it's like, no, we'll try him at maiden special weight. And we ran him a maiden special weight at Los Al, where, you know, the competition might not be as deep as it might be in Santa Anita. And we fully expected him to win, and he did win. The only thing that was surprising that he went off 3-1, and Bob's other horse in the race that it really wasn't much was the lesser price in the race. When we brought him out of that race, and he trained like a real racehorse, and for better, I mean, for lack of better words, we didn't really have a lot of places to run, so. His second race is in the Sham early in February, ironically against Life is Good, going 2 turns in his 2-turn debut, and obviously our 2-turn debut. And, you know, at the end of the race, he was closing on Life is Good. I don't know if he'd have gotten by him, but in either case, it was a super effort, and it was after that race that Bob and I started, you know, looking at each other and, you know, like, this horse is really a nice horse. Forget about his purchase price or anything else. He's really a nice horse, and that was the first time.
There's some things in here, too, I want to include. You know, there's a portion of the backstory that's being told, you know, Gail Rice, the breeder, and her circumstances that saw him sell for $1,000 as a yearling. And then Christine Whitman, who trained him as a pinhook, and she bought him in the back ring. There's actually a very nice story in Bloodhorse about you know, her, how she saw him, and she liked him physically as well, and thought, you know what, this horse is at that price, I'm taking him home. And it just feels like right all along the way there were, you know, there were people that just recognized that, you know, there's something here. And when you talk about the way he debuted and then the way he started to develop, you know, after the first of the year, and tomorrow Sid Fernando will go over the pedigree. There is a lot of stout stamina in here, including Charlotte Weber's brilliant speed, the sire of the dam, Mongolian Changa. And, you know, there's Dynaformer, of course, Britannico by Giant's Causeway. You go further back in the female family, there was everything in place for this one, you know, to stay a route of ground, Gary. And right?
Steve, I mean, if he, I mean, in my mind, and you try to somewhat, you know, somewhat think about the possibilities that might happen and what you might do going forward. In my mind, if he was many of the horses that ran good but didn't win the Derby.
You said this.
I was automatically thinking, run him in the Belmont. You know, I was automatically thinking, run him in the Belmont. Well, he kind of messed that up by winning the Derby. So now we're, you know, we're obligated, or we're not obligated, but you know, he came out of the race well, and you only get a chance to win a Triple Crown once. And, you know, we're going to run him back in the race, I guess. Brad Cox is too. We're running back in there, and Concert Tour's in there and stuff. So it's not going to be a layup, but, you know, you know, this horse has a lot of ability. The horse that, the thing that takes him to his next level is his heart. I mean, so you didn't want to get in a fight with Silver Charm, for those that can remember back in the, but remember the, at the beginning of the Baffert run, you didn't want to get in a fight with that horse. John Henry was like, I found that out in 1981 with Spence Bay. I mean, even, certain great horses, the last thing in the world you want to do is get in a fight with them, you know. And I'm not saying that this horse is Silver Charm or John Henry yet, but I mean, there's horses whose intestinal fortitude or heart or whatever you want to call it, it takes them to the top level of the game. And you know, I think you can say that about this horse. I mean, the first time Johnny V rode him, he looked, you know, he looked at me and walking through the paddock at San Diego, he says, this horse is all right. He really, really tries. And, you know, I mean, I didn't realize how prophetic at that time, you know, what it was going to turn into. But, yeah, I mean, you know, the Bob Lewis and the determination he showed in that race. And you know, this race was kind of a mirror image of that race, only for a lot more cheese. He looked good in the paddock, too. That was the first sign. I mean, sometimes with all the stuff going on in the paddock, there's a couple horses every year that you see can kind of see that it's kind of getting to them, and they're stressing a little. But Medina looked very good in the paddock. He knew what was coming and was more or less embracing the moment. And you know, that was one of the first signs that it was going to be, you know, things might turn out okay.
I agree too, because I was standing on the corner at the far end, and when he was coming around, it was obvious that he looked good. And Midnight Bourbon too, who there was concern that he was going to lose it all week. He was seemingly on edge, but he was good. The horse that actually, it's funny that you said that, Gary. It makes me think the horse that he got aroused, he lost some focus was Rock Your World, in fact, and it went from bad to worse.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, at Santa Anita in the morning, we have what we call the Breakfast Club. I mean, and the three, you know, there's a lot of members, but the three regulars every morning are Baffert, myself, and Sadler, and, you know, we have a lot of laughs up there, and was I thrilled to win? Yes. Was I, you know, John went through what I went through 27 years ago with Rocco, I'm sure, where you think you're going to win the Derby, and all of a sudden, in 1 second, you have no chance, and it's a horrible thing to have happen. I mean, you know, I mean, John's horse, his workout for the in between the San Diego Derby and the Kentucky Derby was as good as it gets, and you know, and to have that happen, and I feel horrible for him. I mean, he's my friend, but you know, he seems to have taken it well, a lot better than I did 27 years ago, and you know, but that horse, I definitely, you know, going into the race, he was probably my number one fear factor. He really was, and with no disrespect to anyone else in the race, he was the horse I feared most.
Well, and, you know, we had two conversations leading up, you know, one when you had gotten back from Ocala and then the final thoughts. And you laid this out really well. I mean, you said that these are the win candidates and these are the obvious horses. And there's always going to be, you know, a field of, in this case, 19. There's always going to be, you know, some things that happen that conspire against some horses, and there's going to be performances that, you know, Mandaloon's performance, for instance, you know, we talked about it. I mean, he was such a wild card coming in.
You know, I mean, we on paper, and sometimes it does work out like it looks on paper. On paper, there wasn't any speed inside of us, so I think the game plan was to break and go and get over to the rail, and you know, ride them like you're putting them on a lead, and if someone wants to go nuts, that's fine. But I mean, that was the game plan going in, and you know, Velasquez did that. You know, he's pretty good, this guy, Johnny. He might have a future in the game, and so we put him there, and like early in the backside, when you're in front, you start looking back, like, okay, who's got horse and who's starting to ride, you know, because in the Derby, starting out the backside, that's when the first group of horses might start saying uncle. So, you know, you could tell Mandaloon had horse. He was, you know, he's tugging a little bit. I mean, Brad had said how they were putting a bit on him that was made basically, I think the quote was, for tough horses, and he was tugging. He wasn't throwing his head and being a complete whack, but he was pulling a little bit, but you could definitely tell he had horse. And right behind him was Flavian on Hot Rod Charlie, and you could, I mean, he was traveling beautifully in the bridle, inside of horses, just picking up horses, and you could tell that he was definitely going to be one of the ones there. And then, you know, you could see Saez on, you know, pretty much at the half mile pole, when you watch the replay, it's really easy to tell which four horses were going to line up at the eighth pole, because they were traveling best at that time, and you know, they did line it up at the eighth pole, and that's true essence of horse racing for that. You know, I thought he would run his best race, and we had learned enough about him that if he gets in a fight, you know, he's got a really good chance, and that's kind of what happened yesterday. I mean, on Saturday.
Fold in, Gary, the, you know, the way in which I asked Bob this yesterday. Fold in the way in which the pace scenario of this race, and essentially, you know, straight up until the until the draw, and when you know where everybody's going to be, you know, the Caddo River factor, you know, his potential to come, then he's running, then he's not, and how that was going to affect the pace decisions and you know, how Johnny would approach the race from a riding standpoint. You know, it ended up working out, you know, just really into your hands and into, you know, Baffert's general strategy. Baffert's quote about Wayne Lucas making a lot of money sending speed horses to the lead, that is now, you know, part of Derby lore with Baffert wiring two Derbies in a row.
You know, I mean, you know, he's, you know, Justify was wire to wire.
Right.
You know, he's
War Emblem.
War Emblem wire to wire. No one even knew who he was when he walked in the starting gate. He went wire to wire. You know, it's you know, in the 20-horse field, there's going to be traffic. And the closer up you are to the front end, the less chance of traffic there is. You know, it's you when you sometimes see the replays of the Derby, there's you know, horses have trouble. I mean, you know, early on, you know, during the running of the race, when they hung 46-3, it's like, okay, it's maybe a tick or two faster than you'd like, but he's by himself. He's running comfortably. You know, he appeared to have more horse than the horses that was, you know, I mean, Mandolin was still a few lengths behind him, so. But the horses in between him and Mandaloni appeared to have more horse than that. You know, the ride by Johnny B was just like, that was a textbook. I mean, if Baffert drew it up on a tote board, like what you want to have happen, everything that, you know, would have been wished for happened. And that's not by accident when that man is on that horse's back.
No, well, you know, I didn't even see, I saw the immediate aftermath. Where did you watch it?
I was down in those suites they have down at the
yeah,
you know, down there, for all the Derby owners. Mr. Zidane was there and his friends that he had brought with him from Jordan I don't know if they got a video of the people when the horses are coming down the stretch or not, but if they had a video of our suite, they would have, I mean, that would be the true, you know, definition of the word bedlam. I mean, I started when the minute Johnny came off the turn and he cornered so well, I started yelling, and then all of a sudden, Mr. Z, he started, you know, yelling, and then, I mean, the whole box, and it was kind of weird because, you know, right next to us, they have it in post position order. The Hot Rod Charlie crew was over there, and, you know, I know Doug and Dennis and, you know, the people that own them seem like real nice people, and they started, you know, their horse hit the seam, and it looked like he might get there. So, I mean, that, you know, right next to each other in those, as in the numerically
right
position suites they have down there, that was a pretty wild area right there between those two suites and that. And, but when, you know, when it became very apparent, like, you know, when he came past me, there was still like 50 yards left till they got to the actual wire. But you could just see that the resilience that he had showed in the Bob Lewis was, was definitely on full effect. And, you know, at that, he was still in front when he came in front of us, and it did not appear that any of the three horses on the outside of him, as gallant of efforts as they might have put up, it did not appear that they were going to be able to get by him, and they did. And that's about the time all hell broke loose. And then we did.
Had you ever walked across the track to the grass side and to the cupola?
No. No.
Describe
that. You know, they use that winner's circle once a year. And, you know, it was like, I welled up a little bit. I don't think I cried, but I mean, it was just like, I mean, it's like, it's something that I have a lot of friends in this business, some of which I maybe not would have been able to accomplish what I have without their help. And there's a lot of people in this business that have been in my life that I wish to experience, you know, that. I mean, that is like, it's an adrenaline rush, like nothing you ever have. You start having flashbacks of, you know, sitting there watching them work, or, you know, I mean, I just thought of everything, like, you know, I mean, I had, you know, I told my girlfriend Jennifer, and I told people close to me, you would also all week, that, you know, I thought this horse was going to run good, you know, but I mean, so there was, you know, I mean, I'd ran three horses in the Derby before Bracco. We've been over that story. I mean, like Line of David, who actually beat Super Saver, the eventual Derby winner of his last Derby prep, but he couldn't stand up in the mud, so he was basically up against it in the Derby. And Ocho, who I bought with Jim and Darren, Jim Cassidy and Darren Pearson. I mean, he made it up to fourth, but he probably was running further than he wanted to, and he was running against a horse named Pharaoh. So, you know, but this horse was, you know, I mean, this horse, though he was 12-1, there was a confidence there, and I just knew that he was going to represent. You know, I told Jim and other people I thought Southern California was going to represent in the race. I really did. And I mean, I think for him to win and the O'Neill horse to run such a gallant third, and obviously we touched on how the Sadler horse was, you know, totally eliminated leaving the gate. So, you know, I think they did, you know, I think we did okay again once again in the Kentucky Derby out here on the left coast.
Well, and you had you had the best experience, really, it seems, because you didn't have to really worry about, you know, anything other than, again, you know, getting him to the race. And you know, there were a few days, actually, Gary, when as he galloped in the mornings, that, you know, you had to hold your breath a little bit, and you know, people think that those, you know, those 2.5-3 minute appearances around the track, you know, how much can they mean? But you know, you sweat those each and every day.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's, you know, anything. Yeah, there's only one chance to have in this, and whether it's spiking a temperature or bruising a foot or you know, twisting an ankle on a gallop that you'd never expect to, or something, it can happen. And and when you have one that you basically know is doing as good as he possibly can, it's human nature of race trackers to, you know, just think, well, please don't let anything go wrong. But yeah, this was, you know, all week long, you're kind of like, you know, just stay right where you at. What? Stay right where you're at right now, Medina. Just stay right where you hold where you are at right now for a few more days. And, you know, everything he did right up to the time they put Johnny V up, was giving off, you know, signs that he was going to run his ass off, and he sure as hell did.
Couple of notes about the other side of this, which includes the opportunity to bet a little. Did you have any future? Did you make any future wagers on him?
Yes.
And Vegas
then I bet
or?
Again. Yeah. I bet again. I bet again on him at 12-1 on Saturday. I was fortunate enough there, being a recovering degenerate gambler as I am. When we're standing out in the winner's circle waiting for them to take the pictures, I said, damn, I needed Hot Rod Charlie for the exacta. And Jill Baffert was standing next to me, and Jill's been known to have a wager or two, and even she had to give me a look when I let out with that as we were waiting for the wager for the Kentucky Derby to be taken. But, you know, it was, yeah.
Enough. Uh-huh. There's never. It's never enough. It's right. It's you know. You could have always. Uh-huh. Could always have bet more. Or.
Oh boy.
Well. Who have you heard from? I want you to reflect on you know your life from Chicago to Florida to California, and you know you talked about the people along the way. I mean, talk about. You know who you've thought about in the last 72 hours, and you know, and when the flight, and you're alone with your thoughts, and then when you get a minute to you know lay in bed and think, you know what's been hitting you?
Waves. I mean, I'm on classmates.com, and I've kept up with a couple of people that I've went to grade school with, and everything, and you know, just some people that were. Like Louis Oliveras was one of my first friends when I started walking half to call the race course in 1978. People that, you know, yeah. I mean, Louis was and still is, you know, I mean, he's one of my homies, and I've heard from a lot of different people. Yeah, I mean, that. Yeah, you know, some I haven't heard from for a lot of years. Schoolmates, guys I used to play basketball with, you know, it's kind of wild. And I mean, and I'd been on the road for 3 weeks, so I came straight from the Ocala sale to here. To Kentucky, so I'd been on the road for 3 weeks. So I come home, and you know, there's like 3 weeks worth of stuff you got to catch up on. And I was really glad that my dog Rex still recognized me. And you know, but yeah, I've heard from people like, wow, you know, it's pretty. I mean, it's like. You know, you go around in life, and whether it be like I go to my gym that's just opened back up in Pasadena and stuff like that, or you know, you meet people outside the racetrack and like, what do you do for a living? And you know, you got a choice. You can tell them that you choose thoroughbred horses out of auctions for people. Or that you gamble on horse racing for a living, and you kind of opt for the first one, so they don't look at you like some kind of degenerate from Let It Ride, and so you say you choose horses out of auctions for people, and you know, quite often the question is, how did you have you ever, you know, have you ever bought a horse that ran or won in the Kentucky Derby? And you know, now you can say, yeah, I did.
Now, that's right. That now you can, and everybody says that when you meet. I've heard one owner after another, particularly say, or a trainer say, "Oh, you're in horse racing. Have you ever one?" Now, yes, as a matter of fact. You better carry a picture around, though. You better that picture of you with Jennifer and with Darren up on the holding the trophy. That probably you need to get that laminated and put it in the wallet.
You know, Darren was like, I mean, I remember when Darren was working for Diz and at Hollywood Park, and that was so long ago. I mean, it was, you know, and I mean, it was, I mean, I sent them my suits and everything I was going to wear for Derby Week when I left for Ocala. And I think I'm probably going to have to do that from here on. And I mean, not that I'm a superstitious person, but I mean, it was like, I got your box here today. He goes, are you moving in? There's a lot. It's a big box. Like, I need some clothes while I'm there. I need to have some nice threads on and stuff like that. I didn't realize I was coming there, you know, and got it. Well, I thought there was a chance, but I mean, yeah. So it was, you know, Jeff Ruby's the night of the Derby. That place rocked. It rocked. I mean, there was some definite fun being had there. It was great, great night. I don't know. Well, I said to Mr. Zidane when he gave me a big hug when it all set in, what the hell do we do for an encore? But, you know, we'll try. We will try.
Well, I was going to ask you what is there. You know, that's exactly the follow up. I mean, what is there to accomplish? You know, subsequently. I mean, yeah, obviously, well, you know, you want to win a championship.
I'm going to Maryland this week, but so far this year we've only purchased one horse, and horse was named. When we bought him, I mean, that doesn't happen that often, but the horse was already named and he's by Gunrunner, and the horse's name was Need More Guns. And we kind of thought in the current, atmosphere of what's going on in America today, I want to change his name. We got it, you know? So, I mean, believe me, I think his name might be Taiba Spirit, much like Medina Spirit. Taiba is a town that is very meaningful to Mr. Zidane, and that's the name that we are applying, trying to get for the horse. And so far, I mean, we paid a lot of money for him. So far, he's acted very nice. And we'll let Baffert map out what he wants to do with the horse because he's pretty good at that. But so far, there's no buyer's remorse with him. And we hope to go to Maryland next week to eat crab cakes, win the Preakness, and buy a couple more horses. Not necessarily in that order, but, you know, those are three things I definitely would like to accomplish.
Well, this one will, no matter what happens subsequently, this stays with you, and it adds to an already outstanding career on the bloodstock side of things. The storyline, Gary, that you know that people are latching onto is, you know, the reasonable number. I suppose the biggest challenge you'll face is any new clients, and people can contact Gary, GaryYoungThoroughbreds.com. Is going to be, you know, can you buy me a Derby winner for $35,000?
I had a guy call last week before he even won the Derby saying how impressed he was with the horse. He wanted one like just like him, but he could only afford $25,000. And I kind of said, I'll get right back to you on that one. You know, I mean, it is good to show that it can be done. I mean,
yes,
it is. I mean, And like I said, there's a lot of people in my life that I wish could have last Saturday happen to them like it happened to me. I know it probably won't happen, but there's a lot of people in my life I wish it could happen to.
Well, it couldn't happen to somebody that is so liked and respected and appreciated and who has worked, you know, tirelessly to, you know, get to this position and, you know, to have a client like Amer Zidan and, you know, to buy grade one winners. I actually got a terrific email, Gary, from Dr. Hart, you know, talking about, you know, your opinion and your eye and, you know, just there's so many people that are just beside themselves with happiness for you. It speaks to what kind of a person you are.
You know, one thing all of those people and myself have in common is we probably had a lot of laughs together and we don't take ourselves too seriously. And if you can do that, then you can hang with us we like to have laughs, and I want to, you know, there's one guy that wasn't at the Derby this year that I wish was, and he's a good friend of mine, and I just want to say that wasn't quite the same without him this year, but we'll see him next year, is Jay Cribman, and if he's listening to this show, I just want to tell him that it wasn't the same with him there this year. It was not the same.
Absolutely a fact. And that's for those of us who work alongside him as well and with him. And he's got to get his Derby streak back up and running next April.
Yes.
Gary, I can't thank you enough. I was so looking forward to this.
Okay, thank you, Steve. Thank you very much.
Gary Young, everybody, and you know, career accomplishment and a moment that you quietly work toward or dream about, and you can really get the sense of. You know, what it's like when it happens, you know, listening to Gary. He's just terrific. And he's certainly, when it comes, as he said, about the laughs, that's part of it, because he's provided so much mirth for so many of us, you know, that get to spend time with him, whether at the sales or at the track, on this, you know, on this setting, you know, for us, it's Derby week. Really nice. Really nice. It's nice. It's nice when something nice, something good happens to the people that you like and admire. Got about a half an hour, and we're going to talk to Brad Cox. We're going to talk to Brendan Walsh as well. I want to slip Brendan in, Case. Let's get Brendan in here for a couple of minutes before Brad joins us. And I want to get a little Maxfield conversation quickly, because that's a performance in the Ali Sheba on Friday that went under the radar. It just looked like a nice win. And then when you go back and realize how he ran, it's notable. And I'm curious to hear from Brendan what he thinks it means for Maxfield, you know, because this was, you know, in terms of a distance, yeah, just curious about mile in the 16th and how brilliant he was on Friday. So we'll see. We'll also get an update on prevalence and you know, the Walsh barn certainly has come alive the last, 2 weeks. So we'll get an update from Brendan, and then Brad Cox will provide us with some thoughts on his weekend, which, you know, you go back to Friday, She Dares the Devil. That performance too hasn't really, and she, you know, she looked tough and she came through. And Votanti, and you know, we mentioned Finite as well to Steve Asmussen. But, you know, Brad had no shortage of success. And even if it wasn't, you know, what he was hoping for, you know, in the Oaks and Derby, his horses ran very well. You know, well, Case, in that case, go to Brad then, because we do have a lot to cover with him. So I might have missed the window with Brendan. It was kind of, I told him, you know, about the quarter after, but I didn't want to rush Gary at all. I wanted to hear everything. So I'm glad we did. Some of the other racing news, we'll save it actually for tomorrow. And some of the other results I haven't even mentioned. I just had Gary. I should have thanked him as well. Not only did he, you know, put people on Medina Spirit and make them, you know, help them focus their Derby approach. He also gave that push on the Senorita winner, Simon Callahan. That Madone that when we talked to Gary, was that Thursday? We were, and I happened to mention the California stakes action, and he delivered there too. So maybe some of you Casey Brendan just texted. He said when he goes to answer, the call gets cut off. It as soon as he goes to hit. So all right. So I guess we'll save Brendan for tomorrow, because Brad Cox is with us. Brad, congratulations on a very successful weekend. I know that. You know, when you send out horses at the highest level and you know, there's some sense of disappointment if you don't win, but overall, your horses all ran.
Steve?
There we go.
Hey, sorry. Thanks for having me on. Sorry.
No, not at all.
Been here.
You've got to be happy with the performances.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Both colts in the Derby, you know, super pleased that they showed up, ran their races, and, you know, so close but so far. And, you know, once again, you know, just very pleased with both efforts from both colts.
I guess, I mean, there's plenty of wins to talk about, including She Dares the Devil, and, of course, earlier in the week, Set Piece. Sunday, you won the Ruffian. And there's also, you know, the non-stakes action from the weekend, including Supremacy and Cool House. But, you know, when you've looked at the replays, and I'm sure you've watched them, you know, a dozen times, I mean, what were your thoughts in terms of, start with Central Quality and, you know, what you thought the difference was?
Well, you know, obviously getting, you know, kind of getting bumped a little bit and maybe losing a little position early. You know, I think Louis had to use him just a little bit to get the position he was able to get going into the first turn, which maybe cost him a little bit. I was very concerned. You know, I really didn't want to be any wider than two wide going into that first turn. And, you know, we found ourselves 3-4 wide. But like I said, Louis had to, you know, use him a bit, given the fact he was bumped a little bit and, you know, kind of took a little, you know, momentum away from him. So, you know, and then I kind of felt like up the backside, you know, where everyone else was kind of somewhat, you know, catching a little bit of a breather, he was in chase mode a little bit. You know, he stayed on extremely well around the turn, maybe leaning out a little bit around the turn. I am happy to report he did come out of the race in great shape and very happy with the way he looks. So, you know, no real reason for why he was leaning out. I checked his mouth good, no cuts, no, nothing physically that we could find. So, and then obviously down the lane, turn for home, I thought we had, you know, had a big shot, and you could just kind of see was staying the same pace. And, you know, then in the last 16, he kind of started running on again. So, you know, just, you know, a good colt that's obviously, I still think one of the top in the group without a doubt. And, you know, we'll see what happens moving forward.
Talk about Mandaloon, who, Brad, he was the toughest equation for players, figuring out how do you interpret, you know, what to do with him out of that Louisiana Derby. Certainly from a workout standpoint and an appearance standpoint, he was sparkling. So, you know, for those that were just willing to put a line through, you could endorse. But, you know, this is not a race historically where you use a horse like this with enthusiasm.
Right. Yeah, and I get that. I mean, I totally get that. And, you know, we, once again, I mean, we had no clue why he performed the way he did in the Louisiana Derby. I mean, you know, you could tell early, or, you know, I would say a little more than halfway through the race in the Louisiana Derby, he just wasn't traveling well that day as far as, you know, taking the jock where he needed to go. And, you know, I don't know, knocked any of the other horses in the Louisiana Derby, but I just thought, you know, this can't be this horse. I mean, we're beating some by some horses that we'd previously beaten and ran extremely well against. And I was just like, this can't be that horse. And there was no reason to just, you know, not run in the Derby off that one bad effort, as long as he trained well moving forward. And like you said, most people witnessed, people that were around saw how well he trained and how well he looked, and he deserved the opportunity, and he showed up. As far as his trip goes, I mean, I thought Florent did a great job. He broke running, you know, established position, you know, down the inside, saved some ground, and, you know, really thought at the 5/16th pole, I was like, wow, we look unbelievable here. I mean, this is amazing. I went from thinking, you know, I saw Central Quality coming, but I thought, wow, Mandaloon's traveling the better of the two at the moment. And I honestly thought we were going by Medina Spirit, and just, you know, and they straightened up. Obviously, you know, Medina Spirit's a very good horse. It was hard to get, well, you know, we're not able to get by him, and, you know, but very proud of the effort. And he's a good horse. You've always thought he was one of the top horses, top 3-year-olds in the country, and he is. And, you know, hopefully we can build off this and get him a grade one victory this year.
I'll mention, I don't know if I said this yesterday in the same terms, I'll say it now, but on Friday, when Shadwell wins the Oaks, my first thought was, now Mandaloon. I was walking to the car, and I thought, Mandaloon is going to win this race tomorrow, and we're going to have a storyline, because, you know, that's the way when you're in the media, that's the way your mind thinks about the storylines. And I'm thinking, you know, Sheikh Hamdan and Prince Khalid are not going to be here to see these two races and these two wins. And when they were on the backstretch, and it was obvious how loaded Florent was, I thought, holy cow. I mean, he's just got a ton of horse. And this was as you know, good a Derby result to have four horses headlong into the stretch, and any of the four seemingly eligible to win. I mean, I can't think of a recent Derby result. Usually it's a parade these days, you know, down to the wire.
Yeah, for sure. It was definitely an exciting stretch run, and, you know, very fortunate and happy to be a part of it. And I wish the result was a little different, but, you know, once again, very proud of both colts.
Well, you run second and fourth in the Derby, certainly, you know, you get added to the list of particularly of Kentucky-based horsemen that have a Derby in their future. Dale Roman, Steve Asmussen, the Holy Grail chase continues. So does the Triple Crown trail. And right now, if all things stay as they are, the two of them go to Baltimore. And of course, give us an update on Caddo River as well.
You know, I'm actually going to have a conversation with John Ed tomorrow concerning Caddo River and our next race for him. And then obviously, we Essential Quality will not march forward to the Preakness. We're going to target the Belmont with him, and I'm going to talk to Garrett with Judmont tomorrow, and we'll make a decision on the Preakness with Mandaloon probably tomorrow or the next day.
Very good. So the way you phrase that, Caddo River far from certain to run.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to talk to him tomorrow, and we'll come up with a game plan. It's out there. It's a possibility. He breathed fine yesterday. Looked great this morning. He seems to be over whatever was bugging him, the week before the Derby or whatever, 5-6 days before the Derby. Seems to be over that. So I think we're in good shape and rolling the right way with him. So we'll have hopefully an idea what we're going to do with him in the near future.
Well, all right. So for those that are listening and keeping tabs, no Essential Quality in Baltimore, a decision coming on Mandaloon in concert with Garrett O'Rourke from Judmont, and John Ed Anthony and Brad will put their heads together about Caddo. So at least we got a partial decision. Meanwhile, let's talk about the Phillies as well, and travel column, good, nice effort. I mean, a quality effort. Your thoughts coming out of the Oaks?
She tried hard. A little disappointed in the placing, but she did run hard. She did come out of it in good order. Very happy with how she came out of it. She went back to the track today. I think we're going to turn our attention toward the Acorn. We need to win a grade one with her. We think she's a grade one filly. I think the Acorn will be obviously a turn back and distance, which never seems to really be a bad thing. And I think the Acorn, the timing of it and everything, makes a lot of sense. She had 6 weeks to the Kentucky Oaks, so she had plenty of time between the Fairgrounds Oaks and the Kentucky Oaks. And, if falls well, we'll hopefully, show up Belmont Day in the Acorn.
Nice. And coach, she was up against it a little.
Yeah. She needed to move forward again. She didn't run a bad race at all. Wasn't beaten a long ways or anything. She didn't embarrass herself one bit, but definitely, step back a little bit. We probably won't be hunting for a grade one in the near future. Just take a step back and try to pick off a grade two or three at some point this year with her.
Well, then let's talk about the weekend winners, including She Dares the Devil, wins the La Troyenne and adds another grade one. And obviously at this racetrack, she's a handful.
Yeah, she is. She really likes Churchill. We're proud of her performance and was very excited that she was able to win a grade one at the age of four. We'll point her for the Breeders' Cup and work our way back from there. There's several other grade ones out there we would like to target see what happens. But she really did come out of it in good order. She's a sound filly. We gave her some time last fall, and she responded well as an older horse, and she seems to be going the right way and very happy with her performance, and hopefully we can get her to the Breeders' Cup in good order.
She Dares the Devil. There was also, of course, let's talk about the Edgewood. I don't want to say fiasco, but Brad, we saw, and was as annoyed and frustrated as anybody when Liz Crowe tweeted that Aunt Pearl had bled. She called it a 3 out of 5. What's the aftermath of that debut, for the seasonal debut?
Well, yeah, we're just going to back off of her a little bit. Just put on some antibiotics afterward, just kind of let her chill out. She did come out of the race extremely sound, so we're just going to kind of take a deep breath with her, relax, maybe just, give her a short break, give her lungs time to heal, and, bring her back, train her, just kind of see if she moves forward, and kind of go from there. I mean, I don't really have a whole lot of idea what we're going to do right now. Just going to kind of let her tell us over the next, you know, couple weeks or month. And, you know, we'll hopefully be able to get her back to the races and being able to compete at a graded stake level or a grade one level, because, you know, she's a grade one talent. And, you know, she accomplished a lot as a two-year-old, and we're going to have to pick our spots and kind of see what, goes along with this issue as far as the bleeding goes. I mean, it's it's something that we're going to have to deal with, and hopefully she can overcome it.
How annoying is this to you? I mean, as the horse players, I mean, here was one of the most backed horses of the weekend, and the industry basically spitting in the face of horse players by putting us in this position where we just it's an absolute wheel of fortune with whether a horse is going to bleed and have it diminish their effort or not.
Yeah, no, it's frustrating. I mean, when you have a filly like this, obviously we went through it with, Hidden Scroll in the Commonwealth. So, you know, it's tough when horses are allowed to run on Lasix, and then, you know, there's races where there are no Lasix. So it's tough, it's tough on the horses, what it's tough on. So it definitely throws a wrench in, like you said, handicapping. I mean, it's definitely tough to get a line on it. But moving forward with her racing, I mean, you know, for someone, I mean, it's going to be, you know, it's something you got to factor in. It's tough to figure out for sure.
Well, hope for the best for her and, some hyperbaric chamber treatment kind of thing.
Yeah. She's going to, get 5 treatments of that over the next week or so. And, we'll, regroup.
You have to be happy. Let's update people on 3 winners that obviously when you got Derby Oaks weekend, you can't take everything in. But Folsom, you wheeled Folsom back in that Oaklawn Stake, got the win there to close out the season at Hot Springs. And Cool House, a nice maiden breaker, has kept nothing but good company. And then I thought Supremacy's race was noteworthy.
Yeah, no doubt. Folsom really, moved forward. He was in one and off the turf race at Keeneland. We wheeled him back a touch quick. We breezed him once at Keeneland. He responded well. Put him on a van shifting to Oaklawn. Thought it was a great spot for him and really ran well. Set off the pace and, you know, kicked on down the lane. So, you know, he didn't mind the mile and an eighth, and he doesn't mind the dirt. So it definitely opens up a lot of options for us moving forward. Very proud of him. Cool House ran big. First time stretching out, 2 3-quarter mile races at the fairgrounds and move forward with the added ground. Excuse me. Really closed well. And, you know, we're hoping that we can get him in some state company in the near future. Supremacy, same thing. Honestly, he broke his maiden, excuse me, at Turfway and ran really, really well. Raced following the Derby. And once again, you know, he's one we are hopeful we can get some stake action soon.
I'll let you clear your throat. You're obviously, I don't.
Sorry about that.
You, that's our no. I was worried for you. I could hear that you were struggling. All nice performances, and I mentioned Folsom, and then on Sunday there was also Vault. I haven't even mentioned Austral Asia, who is really a nice Louisiana bred, and another open company win for her as well. So there's a lot of nice things that happened over the weekend.
Yeah, and a Vault, it was a huge race for her. Rosario did a great job riding her. We shipped her up just a couple days before the race, and it was huge to get that grade 2 win with her. She was a private purchase, and for her to pick off that grade 2 was huge for her. It's big update. She's a jump PA bred jump start that, you know, definitely has some residual now. That's a beautiful physical filly. And now she's got the grade 2 to back it up. So that was a huge update. Cool House, Australasia. Yes, pretty amazing, really. 5 for 5. I was very happy she was eligible for that race, and she responded well. I thought it was a very good group of fillies, and you know, she's a nice lawbred that's capable of competing against open company. So it was a big race there.
There's a couple of others that I, you know, you and I didn't talk after some of the Keeneland action, but Bonnie South, right, mm-hmm. with a stake win, and Juliet Foxtrot, we should fold in, right, the Jenny Wiley win.
Oh yeah, no, that was huge for her, for Judmont to bring her back at the age of six, and you know, reward them with a Grade One. I think prior to that Grade One victory, she was 4-time Grade One placed. And she tries every time you lead her over there. She's got a big heart, tries very hard, and for her to pick off that Grade One is huge. And then Bonnie South, you know, she's been training really well. Seems like she's moved forward at four, from 3 to 4, and that was her first race off a layoff, and really got in a dogfight the last eighth of a mile and prevailed. And I thought against a good group of fillies at Keeneland. So, you know, it was good to get her 4-year-old year kicked off with a victory, and hopefully we can, you know, target some Grade Ones with her. She was a great second in the Alabama last year, and so, you know, we're hopeful that as long as she continues to move forward, she can pick off a Grade One at some point this year.
Well, those are the stake winners and some of the notable weekend successes. I'm going to ask you, there was a New York bred, too, that won, broke the maiden. This one for Sal Kumin and partners, Bob LaPenta involved. Irresistible Girl, that Tapicher filly, broke through over the weekend.
Yeah, she stepped up. Manny Franco rode her. He's rode her several times, and she's knocked on the door a couple times, and flirted with stretching her out a little bit. It didn't work out as well as we thought. We shortened her back up, and that seemed to be the key to getting her maiden broke. So, you know, once again, that New York bred company up there, it's a great thing as far as the purse money and the amount of money these horses can make. So the New York breds are fantastic, and she was able to get her maiden broke, and hopefully, you know, she can bang out some money there on the Niver circuit.
Well, as I mentioned before the Indiana season got started, when you said that, you know, you had committed a string, I said nobody was going to be too happy about that. And yesterday, a couple of wins, the maiden winner, Slick Back, and Vinkaya won an allowance plus a couple of maiden tries. And we talked to Steve Asmussen earlier, Brad, and he was talking about a race that you would have been involved in too. Did you scratch spare cash off the turf?
Yeah, we did scratch today. Yes.
Oh, that's too bad. All right, for those, because Steve said that you know he actually loved his horse in there today, Country Time. If it was going to stay on, but the rain clearly did continue, and so they're off the turf. At Indiana today. So the first thing, Brad, that you got coming back is Bingo John on Thursday in New York, and not part of the carryover pick six, but what's going on with Bingo John?
He's done well. I think with his pedigree, he should like even more ground, the mile and an eighth. He ran well at Aqueduct this winter. He's a 3-year-old. The best I remember, there's several 3-year-olds in the race, but there's an older horse. I want to say a 5-year-old that looks like probably the horse to beat, an older horse. I want to say for Rudy, but you know, he's a nice horse. He's like I said, stepped up to the plate all winter and ran big races at Aqueduct. Really came running last time on an off track, you know, once again, the horse with his pedigree and the way he moves and everything should enjoy the added ground of a mile and an eighth.
We going to see Arklow in the Man of War?
I don't think so. I think we're going to point for the Louisville handicap for the time being, but that's our plan is the Louisville handicap for right now.
Interesting. All right. And then Monomoy Girl, how about an update on her?
She's doing good. Probably going to brief her this weekend, and the Ogden Phipps would be the most likely spot moving forward.
Well, and you know, she ran in a lot of ways that race in the Apple Blossom. In defeat, she was terrific, and in some ways, it was one of her best races. She just got beat. You know, it was Latruska's day.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, she received good figures out of the race, and you know, to receive those figures at the age of six, I mean, you know, very proud of her, and she's continued on, and hopefully, you know, we'll have a big season with her.
Well, it's a successful weekend coming out of Derby Oaks for the Brad Cox team, and you run second and fourth in Derby. You know, there's the, you know, some disappointment, but certainly they ran their races. It's one of the toughest races any year to win, and you'll be looking at the 2-year-olds with summer on the horizon. We'll be watching for the 2-year-olds, but in the meantime, there's plenty more to come for those two. No essential quality in Baltimore. A decision pending on Mandaloon and Caddo River. Brad, well done, and we'll. I hope we're going to see you in Baltimore.
Yeah, I hope to have, you know, maybe a horse in Preakness and hopefully several horses on the undercard. So it's a great weekend of racing, and I always look forward to a trip to Baltimore each year, and the sale as well, the 2-year-olds in training sale as well. So I'm very excited about the following weekend, next weekend.
Outstanding. Brad, thanks a lot, as always. I appreciate the time.
Thanks, Steve. Talk to you soon.
You got it. Brad Cox, everybody, with some proverbial breaking news, and I thank Brad for you know, the opportunity to there was no pre-interview. he didn't let me know that the essential quality piece was going to drop there. So Casey, the one thing we didn't have our what is it? Our Inside Edition? We haven't used our Inside Edition tag in a while, right? You still have that in the system?
Absolutely.
All right, I'll play it. If you can put your finger on it. it obviously it's after the fact. the breaking news. I want to thank Brad for that, and Gary Young. I'm sorry for Brendan Walsh. We'll get Brendan on tomorrow. Don't know what went on there with the phones. Andy Serling, Steve Asmussen, Ron Anderson. Oaks Derby recap number two, brought to you. I keep forgetting to include the brought to you buys, but our Derby Oaks and our old Triple Crown season coverage brought to you by Healthnetics, healthnetics.com, and more. Formtowin.com, too. Got to get you up with Popo probably tomorrow. Sid will be here. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. So day three of Oaks Derby recapping. I think Paul Matisse expected tomorrow, too. And 11 o'clock, you're going to hear about the Hall of Fame vote. I think we know that.